Good morning. I appreciate everyone showing up so early after having such a good time last night. My name is Finette Eaton, and I'm honored to be serving as chair for this panel discussion entitled SAA Fellows Speak Out on Advocating for Archival Programs. The goal of this session is to have a discussion of issues that are of interest and concern for our community. In preparation for this group discussion, the group developed a set of questions. And if you either saw the Archives listserv or Facebook, you saw the questions, and I'm going to read them out to you now. This will serve as a basis for our discussion. The first question, how do you measure the success or failure of your program? How do you calculate a return on investment to your management? That's the first question, and Phil Mooney will start that discussion. The second question, how does your reporting structure impact your ability to advocate for your program? If so, how do you work to change the operating situation? I'm sure all of us have had these types of situations, and Megan will talk about that. The third question, how often do you find yourself reporting to a new boss? And what are some of your strategies for orienting a new boss to what you do and why it is important? And I think both Megan and Mark are going to talk about those issues. That's the beginning of what we want to do. What I have to emphasize very strongly is we want this to be a discussion. We don't have any PowerPoint. We're not reading text. We want to share some of our experiences and have you ask questions. We want this to be very interactive. That is our goal. I'm going to allocate 10 minutes for each of the questions, and we're hoping that you all will have additional questions that you want to ask us. I'm going to introduce our three. We have four people here. A resume or any type of description for Elizabeth Atkins, but we all know Elizabeth Atkins, so I don't think she requires any introduction. Actually, none of the three require any introductions. Phil Mooney is director of the Archives Department at the Coca-Cola Company. Phil has been the director of the Archives Department of the Coca-Cola Company since 1977. Before joining the Coca-Cola Company, he was an archivist at the Balch Institute for Ethnic Studies in Philadelphia and at Syracuse University. A fellow of the Society of American Archivists, he has been a frequent speaker at archival meetings, and he has authored numerous articles on the subject of business archives in the United States. Among his publications are Chapters to the Records of American Business, 1977, and Leadership and Administration of Successful Archival Programs, 2001. He has also taught a workshop on business archives for the Society of American Archivists for over 20 years. In his role as archivist for the Coca-Cola Company, he has conducted numerous interviews for the radio and television, including three segments on the Today Show, and appearances on the History Channel, the Food Network, and CNN. Phil holds an undergraduate degree from Boston College and a master's degree in history from Syracuse University. And in addition to all this, Phil has a chapter in the new SAA publication, The Interactive Archivist, the first web-based publication that is scheduled to be launched at this meeting. Megan Sniffen-Marinoff has been the university archivist at Harvard University since 2004. With a staff of 23, the Harvard University Archives operates a records management program and is the central repository for university records dating back to 1636, as well as the personal papers of Harvard faculty. Prior to arriving at Harvard, Megan was the head of the Institute Archives and Special Collections at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where, among other things, she participated on both policy and operational levels during the initial phase of MIT's DSpace project. Megan also worked at Simmons College in Boston, Massachusetts. Initially serving as college archivist, she spent 15 years teaching and developing the archival management concentration, adding new courses to the curriculum, and creating a dual master's program in archives management, leading to the degrees in library information science and history in the School of Library and Information Science. Megan earned her undergraduate degree from Boston University and a combined graduate degree and certificate in history and archives management from New York University. She served as president of the New England Archivist, was a member of the SAA Council, and is a member of the steering committee for the section on university and record institution archives of the International Council on Archives. Mark Green has directed the American Heritage Center, University of Wyoming, since 2002. The AHC is the university's manuscripts repository, rare books library, and university archives. He has been archivist of Carleton College, the curator of manuscripts at the Minnesota Historical Society for 11 years, and head of the Research Center programs for the Henry Ford Museum. He has published 15 articles in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. He teaches both beginning and advanced appraisal workshops for the Society of American Archivists. He has served as the SAA president, just passed, on its governing council and chaired its manuscript repository section, Congressional Papers Roundtable, and Committee on Education and Professional Development. In 2002, he became an SAA fellow. We will begin the discussion with the first question. I will repeat the question and ask Phil to comment. And I will now sit down after I read the question. Phil, how do you measure the success or failure of your program? How do you calculate a return of investment on your management?
Thank you. Well, I think what we're really talking about here are metrics. And I think that this is one of the things that archivists don't do particularly well, and it's really critically important that we factor that into the way we look at our work. When I talk about return on investment, the term you see in annual reports and other financial documents all the time, what I'm talking about is what do we give back to our resource allocators for the money they've invested in us. And my firm belief is that you've got to have something that you can quantify. You've got to be able, in some very concrete fashion, provide to them a reason to continue their support. Let me give you a couple of examples of ways that we can think about this. In the business community, archives are not something that's a natural component. It's not something that affects the bottom line. We're overhead, pure and simple. There's no getting around that. So when I'm talking to my resource allocators about budget, I'm going to have a pretty good idea that I'm going to be able to demonstrate to them that I can provide some level of return on that investment. For instance, over the last few years, we have developed a program for our images. And in my collection, the images primarily consist of advertising images that we use over and over again. We repurpose them in a lot of different kinds of ways. Previously, when people wanted to reuse our images, they would typically have to go to an agency to get a high-resolution version of whatever image it was. I'd end up providing a slide or some sort of photographic negative to an agency, and there'd be costs involved in all of that process. What we've determined is that we can put all of these images on an intranet site online in a high resolution format that are accessible to our employees in about 200 countries around the world. That one program alone has saved in excess of $1 million per annual year in cost savings. We've eliminated the middleman. We're delivering directly to that. Another good example is we have a licensing program at Coca-Cola, which means that we can take our images of advertising, give them to third parties. Hallmark is a good example. They do picture puzzles and they do greeting cards and things of that nature. Licensing for us is about a $40 million business. we contribute about a third of the revenues coming in. We don't get any of those revenues, I might add, but I tend to talk to my management in terms of a $13 million contribution to the bottom line. Believe me, that more than covers any costs that I have in the archives.
Okay.
Those are two examples taken from my personal situation. All of you can do this in whatever way is quantifiable, whether it's in the number of researchers that you attract by processing one collection over another, whether it's your ability to deal with collections that are of particular relevance to your community, wherever they be. There are ways that you can look at what the work that you do and find a good bottom line return. It's not always about money. It can be about researchers. It can be about elevating collections. But you,
in those terms, and be able to talk to your managers, talk to your resource allocators about what they're going to get in very concrete terms for the money that they're giving you.
Does anyone have any questions or would like to augment that before I turn it over to Mark? Because I know Mark's going to also say something about it. Anyone in the audience? Okay, Mark?
Phil started off by saying that we as a profession tend not to do metrics very well, and I have to agree with him 100%. When I arrived at the American Heritage Center, I wanted to do some benchmarking, some specific comparisons of our program numbers, service to researchers in attraction of international scholars, and in several other categories, and contacted archives around the country asking them for their comparable numbers. And I was astonished at the number of repositories that simply didn't keep statistics. Whether that was not keeping statistics about types of users or not keeping statistics about numbers of collections retrieved or not keeping statistics about rate of collections processed or not keeping statistics about the number of states and nations represented by their researchers, or a whole set of other categories. Fortunately, I found a sufficient number of repositories who were keeping these metrics to allow me to develop a report for my provost that could locate my institution within a set of both similar repositories and what I would call aspirational repositories, the repositories we really wanted to be compared to. But it was a much more difficult process than I had imagined because of how few repositories were keeping the kinds of statistics that I had always assumed were essential to being able...
I am sorry. I thought I turned it off.
To convey to one's management a sense of both basic productivity and the relationship of your repository to others. How well are you doing compared to your peer institutions? And I have to say, at least in my situation, my ability in the end to say to our provost that we were actually benchmarked well against many of our aspirational repositories did a great deal in my particular situation to change the perception that our administration had of our repository. Now, there's a long backstory to that that I won't go into, but the ability to measure is the ability to measure success. And while keeping statistics, particularly statistics on things like boxes retrieved or collections viewed by researchers, or breaking researchers into groups, undergraduates, K-12, faculty, etc. While that takes time and effort, there's absolutely no denying, the payback I have found far outweighs the amount of work that goes into collecting the statistics in the first place. So I'll stop there.
I think Megan wants to say something, and then
yeah,
I think Elizabeth.
I just wanted to add to this that one of the reasons that we're up here is because we represent different sectors of the profession. And I think when we were talking about these questions, we realized that no matter where we were from, we all pretty much had the same issues, but with a little bit of a variation. And in my case, working for a succession of academic institutions, there are two things that I was thinking of as you were speaking. The first is that for those of us that work as college and university archivists, which more often than not you find yourself working in a library system, you also have this added burden of trying to sort of fit archival metrics into library metrics. And I found that when I was first at Harvard, and looking at the annual report, the ARL statistics, that there was virtually no representation of the archival and manuscript activity at the institution going back I don't know how many years. I was shocked when I saw it. And it's taken me 4 years now to really try to convince the people that I report to that we not only need to try to influence outside organizations that collect statistics, but internally we have to do a much better job of identifying. We have a vast collection of archival and manuscript materials at this institution. We have 90 libraries holding materials, and it is virtually invisible in the annual report. So I agree with you, Mark. It's shocking when you start to really drill down a little bit and see what the problems are. I'd also say for people that work in an academic environment that even though you're reporting more often than not to librarians, you really do need to think of yourself as a corporation and appeal to people well beyond the library structure with your statistics and your, you know, trying to prove your value. I work for an organization that claims to be the oldest continuously operating corporation in North America. So it's great because I can appeal to that corporate value really easily in this particular job. It hasn't been true in every academic job I've had, but it's really worth it to try to appeal, trying to show your benefit well beyond the library.
Elizabeth?
Yes, I just wanted to add in terms of Phil's comments about ROI, and those of us in the business archives community have often envied Phil for his ability to be able to actually identify bottom line money that is being spent or saved in a way that he is able to demonstrate ROI, because many of us just can't get that direct an analysis of the money being spent or saved as a result of our efforts. So oftentimes the ROI has to be measured in terms of time and efficiencies, in processes that you help facilitate, in some goal that you're helping to advance for your parent institution. And I think that all goes to understanding the mission of your parent institution, the things that matter to your institution, and how you help contribute towards that overall mission.
Do I have any comments or questions from the audience? And I'm, because we're recording, I'm going to have to hopefully repeat your question.
Unfortunately, it's going to be a little more of a comment, but also
then come up, please.
Come up.
Or maybe up there.
Oh, yeah, why don't you come up here? No, this is interactive. This is the whole purpose of this.
One of the new advocacy strategic goals that Council has adopted or is working on adopting is, in fact, a toolkit to measure ROI. And this comes actually out of a conversation Phil and I had at Chapel Hill how many years ago? But one of the things we're struggling with is the metrics piece. And what I'm hearing, I think, is that we need both internal metrics, but also an external measurement system. And I'm just interested in your thoughts about if there's a way to build a tool for the archival profession that would work across different kinds of institutions and get at both external and internal metrics.
Well, I think there are two types of costs that we could sort of quantify against. Obviously, there are direct costs, and I gave you a couple examples of that a few minutes ago. But there's lots of indirect costs that I don't think we're really good at capturing. And I think we need to get a lot better at capturing those things. So that, what does automation mean for us? What does digitization mean for us in terms of our ability to deliver products to our various clients? I certainly would be a very strong proponent of the fact that the more that we can deliver in automated formats, electronic formats, the better we are going to be at sharing our resources with wider audiences. We've got to find a good way to quantify that. Does that mean cost savings? Does that mean we can operate with, I hate to use this word, less staff? What does that actually mean to our operations? I think we need to get ourselves in the mindset, and I think Mark made a really good point about benchmarking. We've got to do a better job at benchmarking, particularly the resource allocators. I do it all the time with programs that I know are doing a better job than I am in a given category, and I don't hesitate to bring that to management. Because at the end of the day, managers, whether they're in academics or whether they're in corporation, they want to be the best. That's why they're there. That's their charge. And so we need to use that to our advantage in having our conversations. Hope that helps, Marjorie.
Are there any other comments? for questions for this first question? I think one of the things, and I should have said at the beginning, we will continue this discussion after the session. We will, if people have questions that they want to pose to the panel, please post them onto Facebook, SA Facebook, and we will respond. We want to continue this conversation. Let's move on to the second question. And Megan, I'm directing this to you.
Yep.
How does your reporting structure impact your ability to advocate for your program? And as a follow, if so, how do you work to change your reporting structure?
Well, as I said before, I'm going to answer this question within my sector, which is the college and university sector, which I think most of us find ourselves working in a library setting, and this is difficult. If the archives is not part of the library mission, right from the start, you have enormous difficulty advocating for your program. Most colleges and universities report up through an academic library structure. In general, the focus of libraries is on the immediate needs of students and faculty. Although it's changing in a lot of academic institutions, most libraries don't have integrated programs with the IT department beyond academic computing. There's a lingering, I think, disinterest in archives on the part of a lot of librarians. They're interested in the hidden manuscript, personal papers, rare books, side of our work, but they're generally pretty disinterested in institutional archives. And records management, way off the radar screen. It is just nowhere on anyone's mind when you work in this kind of environment. So what do you do? I'm not going to read this, but I made a list of all the people I've reported to in my career. I've reported to a library director. I've reported to two associate directors, one for collection services, one for public services. I've reported to a faculty director, and I've reported to a director in central admin in an institution. And I made a list of my pros and cons. I'll never read this because it's like my secret plan for how to deal with them all. But I do think that way. I think very strategically about where they are in the organization, what their needs are, what I think they could learn from me. You know, I manage up with these folks, I have to say. In terms of changing the reporting structure, it's a hard thing to do, no doubt about it. It's a very difficult thing to do. I have done it once, and I can say that I focused on risk, and I scared the daylights out of the person that I reported to. She really didn't understand what the issues of the archives were. She really didn't want to talk to me at all about the records management issues that the university was facing. I just kept going relentlessly with questions. I didn't become, well, maybe I was annoying, I don't know. but I was successful in the end. But I think that you can't hold back. In an academic setting, you're dealing with wonderful, I love librarians, they're great, but their training is in a different area. They don't speak our language, they don't really do what we do. And I think you just have to confront it head on and not be nice about it. You do need to be nice about it.
But relentless.
Right. And I think you just simply need to raise your profile, too. It is very easy to be submerged within that library world where, again, their mission is quite different than yours. And I think if you sort of work at it, you're able to sort of push out from it. But it's a hard thing to do. And I think, Mark, you've done this.
Well, I've managed to change my reporting structure once as well in my very first job, which was a small private college setting. I reported to the college librarian initially, and fortunately for me, as it turned out, the college librarian was completely disinterested in the archives. Didn't dislike it. Didn't like it. Just basically wanted to ignore it as best he could. And as I developed my program, I very deliberately developed it by building specific connections to units within the upper administration of the university, the development office, the alumni office, the president's office, basically units that the university librarian had virtually no connection to. And having built those connections, I was able, after about 3 years, to make a case to the dean of the college, roughly the equivalent of the provost at a larger university, that given my my programs and my connections within the university, it made much more sense for me to report to the dean of the college than to report to the college librarian. And he was willing to make that switch in my reporting structure. Now, I will say again, a good chunk of my argument was based on metrics, on the clear ability to demonstrate the kind and quantity of service I was providing these other offices. It turned out to be a happy switch, because the dean of the college had a much more fundamental interest in both the administrative uses of the archives and the academic uses of the archives than the college librarian ever had. I've been lucky at the University of Wyoming to have come into a position where my unit, Manuscripts, Archives, and Rare Books, was already separate from the library and reporting to the provost. And so I was spared the need to have to make the argument again.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I've never really had success in moving my reporting structure from one department to another. I did have some success in advocating for removing a layer between myself and senior management. The only reason I was able to do that, well, first of all, I spoke up. I said I didn't think that layer was necessary, although I didn't say that to the person I was reporting to at the time. And I had to wait until that person moved on and that position was eliminated. Then I got to report directly to the person who was my boss's boss, essentially. But I also know that essentially it's sort of like death and taxes. You can count on the fact that sooner or later your reporting structure is going to change. Mm-hmm. And because at least in the corporate environment, and I suspect also in other institutional archives as well, there's not necessarily the right place to report to. You can count on moving around a little. And I know, Phil, you've had how many different in your years at Ford? Coca-Cola? You've never been at Ford.
No. In roughly 3 decades of work in the corporate environment, I literally have lost track of the number of bosses I've had, but it's in excess of 25.
Right. So you can count on it changing. And so for that reason, I just try to reach out as much as I can to the widest variety of people who may or may not someday be my boss.
Mm-hmm.
Just try to develop good relations with a wide network.
When I was at the Smithsonian Institution Archives, at one point we were under the provost, and then we were under the chief and CIO, and then when I left, we were under the undersecretary under the American History. So within 5 years, we were reporting to three different people. I'd also like to look at it in a slightly, take a little bit of a different tack. One of the issues that I've always found is, where do electronic records fit in the reporting? Where do they fit? And that is an ongoing situation. I know that there have been those that say, well, you need to have a separate unit dealing with electronic records. A lot of times they say, no, everyone should be dealing with it, and so it should just be a part. And that has been a discussion that's been going on for 20 years, and I think I'm beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I think that will shake down. But if you're involved with electronic records, there's going to be this constant pull. Who are you? You're clearly going to be working with the technology, but you're also going to be working with the program offices. So that's another side of looking at it. Questions from the floor? Discussion? Do you want to ask a question, or would you like to make a comment? So the question for Megan is, she wants clarification if you scared the person into changing.
Yes.
Can you elaborate?
Well, yeah, I can. There was someone who I was reporting to that was very interested, actually, in the very early materials that we had in the collection, but wasn't really interested at all in talking about contemporary materials, electronic records issues, etc. And I just kept talking about the risk to the institution that I did a lot of memos. I covered myself. And I said, look, I'm bringing you these issues. We really need to talk about these issues. I think at a certain point, she got worried. It did affect who I reported to in the end. They moved me to another area. And it was exactly what I'd hoped happened. But it was, yes. The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Please. That was a very eloquent question. I'm not going to do a good job of repeating it. Basically, when you have a change of administration, then the way to elevate your profile is to put out information about your organization. What are the elements that you put forward? Did that basically? Good.
You know, this is actually the next question.
Let's move on.
Since I have a little thing written here, maybe you want me to?
Please go ahead.
Yeah. So I'll read the question, since you wanted to read the questions, which is, I think this is the same thing that you're saying. What are some of your strategies for orienting a new boss to what you do and why it's important? So just a few things I've thought of. First, recognize that first impressions really do count. I find that if I wow the person right away, do some research on them, just find out what they're interested in. I have a director right now who is passionate about 18th century French Enlightenment. So when he came in, boom. We did he came in for a casual tour, and we happened to have out on the table our 18th century, anything we could find, So you start off with the first impression really counts. But at the same time, not knowing how often I would get to talk to this person, you kind of start off with the good, and then you go to the bad and the ugly, and then I sort of pointed out all the things that were wrong with the space, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, hovering over his beloved 18th century materials. You need to seek out teachable moments, I think. You need to find out what interests people. You need to make the connection for them. I find that, at least with people that you report to, it's really good to give them stories to tell on your behalf. give them, you know, some inside information on the background of a particularly rare or important collection, a riveting story about an acquisition or a loss, some things that they, you know, they're your ambassador. I think if you sort of find those moments, it really does help you along. I think you need to connect the dots on a regular basis. I think you need to speak with people privately, pointing out the connection between your operation and other larger activities going on in the organization. I think that you need to speak out publicly, but with some care and savvy. I think if you're trying to make points that haven't been made, that you'd like to have made. I also find that it's really important to build alliances with your colleagues. And the effectiveness of other support for your activity within your organization, have other people say it for you, is really wonderful. You know, if part of what you're doing is trying to assist your colleagues in their work, it's real, and it's a story, I think, that goes a long way to help you. I think you should volunteer for special projects, committees. I've bullied my way onto committees at times that I think I should be on, and it's painful to sometimes have to do that, but I've done that. I think you need to be a supportive employee and colleague in return. I think it's really important to be genuine in understanding the larger mission of your institution and realizing that you're not the only, you know, the world doesn't revolve around the archives. The archives is part of a larger world, and I think if you express in a mature way your understanding of the larger institution, that goes a long way too, what their bottom line is. In my case, it's education. And I think you really, this is probably the most important thing, I think, that you really need to understand that orientation, advocacy with a new boss never ends. You're going to have 29 bosses. I've had 6. It never ends. And I have to say, in the years I've been in the profession, I've noticed that the people who've left the profession that have been colleagues, I think they leave more often than not because they get burned out on this aspect of the job, you know, where you feel as if you're constantly repeating yourself again and again, explaining what the archives does, you know. And the way I look at it is minimum 20% of your job is doing that. You just have to accept the fact that's part of your job. You need to be cheerful about it. You need to be enthusiastic about it. You know, anyway, I'll stop.
Others want to comment?
Yeah, I think to the point that I made before, in the corporate world, our archives are a-corporate. It's not something that naturally falls there. And I think to some degree in the library setting, that's not the first thing that comes to mind to an administrator. When I was working in the library world, I once had a librarian tell me that he viewed the library as a cake and that special collections were the frosting. And so if he didn't have enough, he's going to get rid of the frosting and just focus on the cake. And that's kind of where we all fall to one degree or another. And our job, as Megan has really said, is to be an advocate. One of the great things about having an institutional program is you do have the institutional knowledge. And when a new person comes into a role, they do not want to fail by stumbling into a mistake that somebody else has made. And so you have a tremendous opportunity, sometimes 20 to 30 times, to let people know that you have resources that are going to help that person succeed. It's in all of our interest to have our bosses succeed. And so how do we position ourselves and our programs in a way that's going to help them there? I'm a very strong advocate of inserting myself into every part of the organization that'll give me a voice, so that I become part of the culture of the organization. They can't imagine a world where I don't exist.
We can't either.
We hope that happens, but that's a tactic for me, and so I have inserted myself into one concrete example, into the marketing program at Coke. And believe me, marketing drives what we do. We're a consumer products company. So there's not an orientation program where my organization is not represented, where we try to make sure that folks aren't going out and reinventing the wheel before they at least come to us and get a better understanding about the brands that they're managing. That's just one concrete example, but you know, you make sure that you're there to help the boss succeed. That'll be my quick one-liner for you.
Go ahead, Mark. I just wanted to add to what Megan said. She pointed out, I think, pretty clearly you need to target your message to whoever your boss is and understand your boss's interests. My husband is a former salesman, and he always told me when you're going to meet someone for the first time, if you're going to their office, just look around their office and see what's on the walls, what is of interest to them, and just comment on that, and you've already started to develop a little bit of a connection. I think, too, that it's very useful, especially when you get advance warning that a change is coming, to sit down and think about whether or not it's one of the tools you can use is an actual presentation, and just pull together all the ideas from all the things you've probably said 20 times about what the archives is and how it serves the organization. So there's the off-the-shelf stuff, and then there's the customized targeted messages that I think make all the difference in the world. And I always work to get a new boss to the archives for a tour, because there's nothing like the archives itself, I think, to really sell the message of the benefit of the archives.
I'd like to touch briefly on four things that Megan raised and comment on one point that Phil raised. I think Megan is absolutely right when she talks about the importance of speaking privately to your boss. Frankly, whether it's a new boss or an old boss, you can't wait or expect your boss to come and visit you. You need to make sure that you've got an appointment on his or her calendar at least once a month, to sit down and to talk about primarily the successes of your program, any wonderful new collections that have come in, increases in statistics, the fact that you or one of your staff members has been invited to present a paper at a national conference. Make sure your boss can't forget you. Once a month, be in his or her office talking about your program. Megan also talked about the importance of getting others to speak for you. And again, I think she's absolutely right. Whether you're in, I think, whether you're in a corporate setting or you're in a university setting or you're in a religious setting, having your internal or external constituents speak directly to your boss about the quality of your program is often going to mean more than anything you say to your boss about the quality of your program.
If I could just chime in, that is one thing, actually. If I'm getting feedback from someone who's pleased with something that I've done or the archive staff has done, I always ask them to put that in writing, or, you know, it's best if it's in writing, and pass that word along rather than me passing it third hand.
It's something of the same issue that affects consultants. You have probably all had the experience of consultants coming in from the outside and telling your boss something that you've been telling him or her for 5 years, and your boss listening to the consultant and saying, "Oh, yes, that's what a great idea," because it's coming from the outside. Volunteering for special projects, I would take that point a step further and suggest that it is occasionally possible to engineer special projects that you can volunteer for. And I'll give you a specific example at my institution. I spent the better part of a year passing on to our associate general counsel information blurbs from the press about the risk of not having proper management control over institutional email. And was assisted in this by the fact that the university was sued by a disgruntled ex-employee some of the evidence for that suit was in the email of the ex-president of the university. The university had no copies of that president's email. Fortunately, the ex-president had made his own copies of his email and taken them with him to his new job and was kind enough to send the copies back for the trial. But those that confluence of information and incidents allowed me to convince the president of the university to establish a task force that I am chairing to develop guidelines for the management of email at our university. And the associate general counsel is a member of that task force, and the vice president for technology is a member of that task force, but I am the chair of the task force.
Other comments?
Mark?
Gee, you got to count.
I'll talk faster.
No, don't.
Fourth, Megan talked about the importance of demonstrating how your program supports the larger mission of the institution. And that may be the most important thing that any of us says today. Everything that you communicate to your boss ought to be directed to explaining how your program supports your institution's mission, whether it's, again, whether it's a corporate mission or a university mission or any other kind of institutional mission. You are a part of that institution, and there to serve the mission of that institution. And if your boss thinks or ever comes to think that your unit has no role to play or just a little role to play or a minor role to play in supporting that mission, you're in grave danger. The final thing I'd like to touch on is Phil's analogy of the cake and frosting. And I'd like to say that we may be seeing a sea change there. I've been invited to a conference in October in Washington, D.C., co-sponsored by the Association of Research Libraries and CNI. What is
Coalition for Networked Information?
Thank you. To talk specifically about the extent to which within the university world, special collections, manuscripts, archives, rare books, may be becoming the center rather than the periphery of the library universe because of the fact that more and more library collections at research institutions are looking more and more the same because they're being purchased digitally and they're being we now see programs like Google's digitization of massive university libraries that can now be shared by every university in the country. So the core collections at the universities look more and more the same. There's less and less to distinguish one great university library from another, except the quality of their special collections. And we need to be conscious of this change and take our best advantage of it. I think you'll probably see some sort of small publication come out of the conference in Washington, and I would urge you to keep your eyes and ears out for that and any similar discussions about the increasing importance of special collections within the research library community as the distinguishing factor between one library and another.
I regret that we're running out of time, but I think it's very appropriate to leave on such a high note that archives are as important as they are and that we will become more of a presence. I thank you all for coming. We will welcome questions if people want to continue this discussion on SAA's Facebook. We will be there to continue the discussion. I thank you all for coming, and let's thank the panelists for a very good session.